I call them the big three when it comes to our cost of living. What are gasoline prices doing? By the way, popping up on the West Coast, I saw this weekend. We've also got, of course, what the housing crisis across this country, rents, et cetera, and food prices. Well, we've been very fortunate on Money Talks to be able to call on Dr. Sylvain Charlebois. He's the Senior Director, Agri-Food Analytics Lab at Dalhousie University. That's the go-to place when you want to find out what's going on in the food market. They call him the food professor, by the way, where you can find him on Twitter and also his own podcast. There's a lot of ways. I'll get into that later. First of all, Dr. Charlebois, we appreciate you finding time for us because this topic just keeps on giving.
Oh, absolutely. Every day there's something going on. And yeah, I'm happy to be involved with the with our collective discussion about the future of food. It's been pretty intensive the last 4 years for sure.
Yeah. Let me just, speaking of the last 4 years, we get our inflation numbers. Of course, they may be measured annually, might be measured month to month. But so we got food at about 1.9%, I think, which was predicted, by the way, by the Agri-Food Analytics Lab in their annual report that we'd get that decline. But a lot of people don't feel much better about it. And that's because they're worried more what the ultimate cost was, not the rise in costs over a particularly small period of time. So just basically, what are we talking about? If I look back 4 years, how much are, you know, and again, it depends on what food category, but how much are food prices up generally?
Yeah. So if you look at all food categories combined, the increase is about 24% since the start of COVID back in March of 2020. But that's not how people feel. In fact, about a month ago, we actually asked 9,000 Canadians. We asked them, how much do you think prices have actually gone up in the last 4 years? And the average answer we got was 78%.
Okay? Wow.
78%. Yeah. So that's a gap of 55% between fiction and reality. But that fiction, that perception is really important for the food industry because you're basically dealing with a disgruntled consumer, a consumer that is absolutely worried sick about his or her finances. And it's not just about food prices. It's the cost of living, real estate, yeah, mortgages, debt, everything happening at once. And that's why when people actually show up at the grocery store, they're actually trading down because it's a easy place to trade down. It's an easy place to save money.
Yeah, we've certainly seen surveys saying, yeah, I don't buy the same. I mean, I and my own family, we don't buy the same expensive cut of meat, for example, you know, still passing out when we see some of those prices because I've considered shopping with my bank manager for a loan instantly if I actually want to have a high grade piece of meat, which is just a thing in the past, by the way.
I know,
but
yeah,
but there's other things that I think there's misconceptions, and I think they're fueled by politicians trying to hop on a hobby horse. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I know that, you know, I read the Conference Board of Canada's report on groceries. I read the Bank of Canada's. Both of them said, "Hey, we need more competition in this market." Bottom line, we need, and you know, that, of course, competition gives me as a consumer more choice. But then I turn around, and it feels like almost on a daily basis, we've got the partner in government, the NDP, their leader, Jagmeet Singh, bad mouthing, you know, CEOs, like, you know, outing them, saying they're at fault, the greedy companies are at fault. And yet that overlooks so many other price pressures within this category. But first of all, let me just ask you, I mean, we are not having any success attracting, you know, major U.S. retailers, grocery retailers into our country. I can hardly think that that helps when they're bad mouthed, you know, from the get-go, plus other obstacles.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, political optics aren't necessarily good for anybody looking at Canada. Of course, why would you want to conduct business in Canada only to be summoned in Ottawa every 3 months and be accused of profiteering? I mean, that's certainly not something that is helping. But what is certainly not helping at all is the state of our economy. I mean, if you actually look at the amount of money people are spending at the grocery store, in 2018, the average Canadian was actually spending $304 constant dollars at the grocery store per month. We're down to 243. So people are retreating. People are spending less. They're trading down, buying cheaper food. They're going to the dollar store. I mean, it's really bad, Mike. So bad. GDP per capita is down also. There's less wealth. Incomes are stagnant. Why would you come to Canada when you look at some of that macroeconomic data discouraging anybody to invest in Canada? So we have Ottawa right now and Mr. Champagne dialing for grocers. There's a list of 12 grocers now that he has. If he calls one of the grocers on that list, my guess is that he's going to get an earful.
And that's an example, as I say, it's other things in terms of lack of competition. The taxation of groceries adds to the cost too. And you did you and your group did a great video on this. On we've been moaning about shrinkflation, and I doubt there's a Canadian who hasn't noticed it. Like, how small is that bottle, or how small is that package, or excuse me, fewer things. What I'll tell you, I didn't appreciate is you can get moved to a different tax category. You know, if we drop down, and I'll let you explain it better than I will, but you drop down and all of a sudden you're not a grocery, you're a snack food. Maybe elaborate a little bit on that, because that's part of the component prices of what I pay at the store.
Oh, absolutely. And this is what's mind-boggling about what's going on in Canada, Mike. You have a budget, a federal budget, spending our next generation's money, really, a lot of money. And you can think of a few things that wouldn't cost much that could actually make a huge difference in people's lives, like the snack tax. And what is the snack tax? It's pretty simple. When you go to the grocery store, there are 4,600 products that are taxable because, according to the CRA, they're considered as snacks, not food. Food is not taxable. Snacks are. But here's the thing about shrinkflation. If a product gets shrunk too much, it becomes a snack. For example, if you have a jug of ice cream of over 500 mil, you're fine. That's food. Below 500 mil, that's taxable. Okay. And a lot of companies have actually gone down to with jugs that are under 500 mil. Granola bar boxes, 6, not taxable. 5, taxable. So with the budget, Mr. Trudeau could have just easily said, you know what, we're going to be exempting any products that have been shrinkflated that are now taxable. And that would have saved people a lot of money. And guess what? People would have appreciated that measure because it's real. It affects everyone every single day. So that sometimes I do wonder why. I mean, it's a low-hanging fruit for the government, for any government to do.
You know, it's interesting. Of course, anybody who's packed a lunch for an elementary school child or a, you know, high school child is certainly including those kinds of snacks usually.
Yeah.
And, you know, so feel it immediately. My theory on why they don't is because they don't know anybody. That's what I think across the board, you know, that I've been on and on about the fact that we haven't appreciated, you know, starting with COVID, where we said we're all in this together. And I said, no, we're not. You know, my personal circumstances are nowhere near sort of a single parent in a put in a lockdown situation in a one bedroom apartment, and the playgrounds are all roped off, you know, whatever it is. I said, I am not dealing with that. I am not sitting there worried if my paycheck is going to come in or I can't afford food. And my estimation looking at polls is we're at about 55% of Canadians are in that. So why didn't they address it? I said, because they don't know anybody. They literally
probably
don't know people at the
lower. You're probably right, Mike,
level.
But I'll be honest with you. I mean, taxing anything, we're taxing everything now. And taxing food is immoral. I'm sorry, but it's immoral. I think there are ways to make the grocery store a little friendlier for those who are really operating with a tight budget. And right now, I mean, we're quick at pointing fingers at companies who are gouging and profiteering, but we're not quick at looking at policy making food more expensive, including the zero-base policy at CRA. And by the way, the CRA, I know it's going to hurt, Mike, but the CRA in the last 12 months has hired 5,000 more people. 5,000. Oh, yeah.
And by the way, I don't want to get too off topic. I've seen what they're doing, and I'm being serious. I've seen some horrendous cases of we're going to audit you from something well before I thought the audit could take place, you know, 6 or 7 years. No, they went back further for a business. And I'm going, what else are they going to be doing? They're going to be looking at the past to see if there's any money there. And of course, looking at the future. But yes, that's it's a direction that the government's choosing to go.
And you could argue that, well, Revenue Canada is revenue for the government, but when you look at the correlation between the number of employees added to the CRA payroll versus government revenues, there's just no connection at all. So you do wonder what's going on. And of course, it's been outed that the carbon tax is also contributing to the number, to the greater number of people working at the CRA. So there's lots of policies. We're nationalizing everything. Okay. We're nationalizing the school food program. We're nationalizing the daycare program. It's great. If that's what Canadians want, that's great. But at the same time, you have to accept the fact that you're going to see a much larger bureaucracy in Ottawa.
Yeah, and I got a feeling people be listening to this and tearing their hair out, saying they are not on the side where they want to see more government intervention. And that's a political choice that we're going to be making, and we'll be debating during the upcoming election. One side. I've never seen bigger distinctions, by the way, Sylvain, between the parties' approaches. And yep. One is because the federal government, and many support that, they want to see more and more government intervention. What were used to be private sector is not any longer. Dental care, pharma care, food. There's legitimate questions about the government's ability to pull that off, given some of the other track record. But there's those who don't. They don't want the government continually more involved, a bigger bureaucracy, which is, what is it, up 68% in, I've had a chance to talk to the parliamentary budget officer, and he says the key question is Canadians have to ask, what did you get for it?
Exactly. No, I think your observation is bang on, Mike. I typically during an election in Canada, it's always about the fight of the center. Who's going to be defining the center in Canada? Okay. Whether it's the Liberals, Conservatives, whoever. This time around, it's going to be about ideology and vision. Absolutely. And I think the legacy of the Trudeau government is to be incredibly divisive. And this is what we're seeing in the United States as well. So people can say, well, divisiveness actually brings people to talk about policy, meaningful policy, but divisiveness can also actually bring anger, hostility, and violence as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And another time I'll go into that with you, what our modeling shows, because it's been absolutely adequate or accurate, pardon me. It's been accurate all the way along about those kind of social trends. Mm-hmm. I don't know anyone else whose model called Trump victory in 2016, Brexit would go through. We did all of that, put it on the air. That trend is well entrenched at this point and leads to very big changes.
And that divisiveness has affected food policy in our country, really. You're seeing it with Environment Climate Change Canada, looking at farmers, looking at the agri-food sector overall. There's a lot of anger. There's a lot of tension that's actually generated by good politics, but bad policy. Yeah.
And so many different areas we could allude to on that. Let me come back to this, though, because, again, the work that you people do at the Agri-Food Analytics Lab, you were one of the big proponents. I'd call you the lead person on this, saying, you wanted to see bigger discounts when food got toward their expiry date, and you were holding some accountable for that, and I think successfully accountable. That begged a lot of questions.
Oh, yeah.
For some people. One is it safe? Are Canadians in general more inclined to eat food because of the discount, when they get toward that best till date? What did you guys find out about that? Because you did extensive research on it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We were glad to get some attention about this study because we want to inform the public about what best before dates are all about. And best before dates, or best before, doesn't mean bad after. And a lot of people don't know that. They think it's actually a really strict rule. Bad after that date, you got to throw away. It's really up to the consumer to decide. The consumer, to me, is the most important risk manager in the entire food supply chain. And we should remind ourselves of that all the time. Expiry dates, that's different. Expiry dates will apply to maybe 1.5% of all foods we buy. And you shouldn't eat or consume a product past an expiry date. But for best before dates, people should use judgment. But here's the thing, Mike, because of higher food prices, people are actually pushing the envelope a little bit further. They are actually 58% of Canadians are now eating food past their best before dates, more so than than 12 months ago. And of course, they're also looking at issues in relation to packaging. They're also looking at issues related to conserving food at home as much as possible, using freezers and things like that. So people are perhaps even wasting less food, but they're probably risking more as well.
That's a distinction I hear very few people understand. The difference between an expiry date and a best before date, I think they get confused all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's why it's important to come out with these studies so you can have an opportunity to explain to the public what the differences are. Because if you go on the CFIA website, which is atrocious, let's be honest, it's not friendly. It's not friendly for anyone to understand. It's important to remind people of those distinctions.
You know, I'm going to come back to again what a more profound or longer term solution is. We did talk about, but I want to get one more quick comment from you on the carbon tax and the impact on food prices, because of course the carbon tax is applied all along the chain, you know, whether it's a manufacturing facility, whether it's the transportation, et cetera, right into the shelves. So a quick comment on the impact of the carbon tax on food prices.
So we don't know for sure what the impact is, to be honest, but as we progress towards a carbon tax of $170 a metric ton by 2030, we're going to be probably seeing a measurable impact over time. The real impact that can be measured now is within the supply chain. You can see that wholesale prices are going up much faster than the U.S. Industrial prices are going up much faster than the U.S. So that gap is really just making our food sector less competitive. And guess what could happen, Mike? I mean, right now you could see probably some companies leave Canada to go somewhere else like the United States just because the Canadian regime or the market in Canada is impossible to make any company become competitive. And in BC in particular, I mean, if there is one place where manufacturing is hurting, is certainly in BC. It's very hard because of the fact that you have little access to industrial land in BC. Building a food manufacturing facility is very difficult. So add the carbon tax to that argument. No company will ever even think about building anything in the province or elsewhere in Canada. So there's a lot going on that nobody really seemed to measure. So we have Ottawa not even measuring the impact of the carbon tax on the environment. And now they're basically refunding everyone, companies, people. So you do wonder, Mike, so what are we doing now? Like, what's the purpose of this particular policy? And frankly, when you talk to farmers, food manufacturers, retailers, they have no clue where Ottawa is going with this.
And it's a reminder how broad this food chain is. We look at the end product and, you know, when we go to a grocery store, but there's so many components. And now, for example, I'm worried about the upward pressure on energy costs, you know, and we've seen that. And again, you mentioned going out in BC, you should see the price of gasoline, the highest in North America, a big 6 cent jump on Friday. That it took a 6 cents per liter jump, you know, well, that's going to get reflected because of transportation costs and other, I mean, the power for manufacturing, the list goes on. Yeah. And I just think Canadians will finish with this. The Canadians are not well aware of all of the price components that go in to the ultimate price I pay on the shelf. You know, certainly not just grocery stores.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so that compounding effect needs to be better appreciated. And frankly, when you go back many years ago, no one in Ottawa has actually ever looked at how the policy could impact food affordability in Canada. And that's really, that's reckless. It's really simply reckless, because when you're actually compromising a nation's food security by way of implementing bad policy, that's just bad government. And so you got to be really extremely careful with how you handle things. And to me, the Trudeau government's policy around carbon pricing is the most important one. If it is the most important one, you got to measure its performance, and nothing is being done right now. I think every Canadian wants to become better environmental stewards, and even pay taxes if that's what we need to do. But at the end of the day, you need to build an argument to the Canadian public on what is being accomplished here, and nothing has been clear for Canadians.
Well, as you said, and we had the parliamentary budget officer, Yves Giraud, tell us that there's been no cost-benefit analysis on any of the green policies. You know, So what are we getting in return? How do we know which is most effective?
Nobody knows.
Yeah, another subject, of course. Look, I know you're on a tight timeline today, but I got to tell you, we so much appreciate your work, and I want to invite people to go to The Food Professor on Twitter. Always a good summary of the stuff they're working on at the Dalhousie Agri-Food Analytics Lab there. New studies that come out. That's how I keep abreast of it, and I invite you to do the same. Sylvain Charlebois, thanks so much. You know we appreciate your time and your expertise.
My pleasure, Mike.